Hello and good afternoon. Welcome to Translating Heart Intelligence. This is episode 2. You're here today with Justin and Kenna. How are you doing today, Kenna?
I'm doing really good. I'm glad to be here with you today and exploring the different topics that we're going to be covering today.
So how are we going to connect our second episode with our first episode?
We left off in our last episode talking about how to take feelings, ideas, and turning them into language that you could submit for policy changes or different project ideas that you maybe have about your own world. And I was talking about one of the first ones that I did that I sent to the Treasury Department through their emailing system. It's congressionalinquiries@treasury.gov, I think, something like that. How do you feel about that?
I guess it's our intention to have an idea and translate that using the AI.
Yeah. One of my biggest hurdles that I found when I started working with the artificial intelligence was me actually wanting to understand just how my perception of being here even works. That was actually one of my main things that I really started to focus on. I tried to ask questions and have it reflect back to me, essentially like how I even make decisions and how I participate with my own life, my own reality. And so when I started beginning asking those questions, what I really came to understand initially, and this all leads up to me being able to get out the information that I wanted to in a policy. So what I really came up with was, first, I make a decision for my life. You're always making a yes or no decision for everything that you do here. And then from there, it becomes a relationship. So if you decide to drink your sweet tea, then you pick it up and you have that experience of drinking the sweet tea after you make the decision to do it. And a lot of these times, these decisions happen so quickly that we don't even know that it is the yes or no question that begins the experience that you have usually. And so that's really what led me to also start asking, okay, so after I have a yes or no question and I start having a experience or a relationship with something or my environment, let's say I have a dream then instead, like a wish. Like, what if I wanted to change the world, or what if I want to be able to fly, or what if I want to be able to have like a super nice car? Some people also like call it manifesting, right? Like,
yeah.
You can manifest something into your life. And so I started exploring what makes what I want to have experiential. Any experience that I want to have that I say, yes, I want to have that experience. What about being here slows that down?
Survival.
Well, yes, survival. But what I said, the word that I came up with when I was using the chat to explain this to myself was a governor function. And the governor function of your qualitative experience you have as a result of a choice you make ultimately actually comes from your nervous system. So, for example, if I wanted to do something, you know, like skydiving, so I make the decision, yes, I want to go skydiving. I have this dream that I want to do it. I want to have this qualitative experience of going skydiving. And then you wait for it all to happen. You're at the airport. You're ready to get on the plane. And then you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Hold on a second. You know, like my body is going into overdrive and it's like, maybe I don't want to do this. And that's when you really start doubting what your dream is your body sends you signals of nervousness. You know, it can be a whole bunch of different things. The other thing that I was exploring when I started this was for things that you can be really excited about. So even like abundance. Are people winning the lottery?
Yeah, that's always an idea that everybody has. It's a fun idea to think about.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, so if you won the lottery, like people talk about that, right? Like, what would you do if you won the lottery? And people will have like a plan of where they'll allocate the money, where they'll put everything. And it's like they're preparing, right? They're preparing for that to happen. Because I feel like most people, if all of a sudden you woke up one day and you looked at your bank account and you had this obscene amount of money in there, probably some disbelief, some shock. You might even call the bank and be like, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? They're like, yeah, it's yours. Like, if you have so much limitless potential right in front of you and it smacks you like a bus, sometimes it can feel like a bus. You know?
Well, it'd be very overwhelming, but I guess the number one thing that you know, like what we were saying before is their relief of no more having to rely on outsourced time for their own survival.
Yeah.
You know, no more having to pay, you know, bills and all that. Everything will be met for them and, you know, their family if they choose, or they just disappear to Mexico or something. So,
well, I think that's the goal, right? That's the goal, is when you have a dream or you have something that you want to do, you want to be able to have that qualitative relationship or experience. You want to be able, like, that's the whole reason why you have a dream or have a wish. But it's understanding that your body also has to process the emotions related to that happening as it starts, or, you know, sometimes you can like emotional bypass and you can process emotions afterwards. But the other thing is all of that stimulation really does come from your nervous system. And so that's one thing that I was really exploring in depth was, okay, so my limiter on myself and things coming into my own created reality is my body's inability to hold all of that emotion, whether it would be excitement or fear. That, like, ultimately was the biggest kind of gatekeeper for me even wanting to send out, like, different ideas was, like, oh, well, what if I actually got a response? Like, how would I handle that? Because the other example that I was thinking about, so, like, if you're a firefighter, if you're in the military, if you're in the medical system, what they do for people in those systems currently is you run a lot of drills, right?
You're trained constantly. or any and every scenario to ensure that you don't freak out if there is an actual emergency. It all just becomes muscle memory.
So it becomes, so it's like from the previous show, the crochet example. So you can work on an action or a movement, a way to get something done. You can train yourself and your body to do that. So you don't even have to think about it, or you're not having to process the emotion during whatever it is that you're having an experience doing.
So you mentioned the governor before. How is that connected to your nervous system?
Well, I'm going to say from my experience of what I've learned is that my body has to be able to slowly walk in to a really big idea. Like, I don't think I would be one of those people that if we won the lottery, I mean, I think it would be like super cool, but I would be like really stressed out, because then you get, you know, security problems if your name's in the paper. Like, there's so much else that goes along with it that I'm thinking about, that for me, it's a lot easier to create ideas, make art, just like participate when I feel calmer.
Right.
You know? So like where my calmness comes from is my environment. So if I have safety in my home, if we know that we have food, that our basic needs of water can be met, like right. That really helps me be more calm.
To calm your emotional state and mostly just the survival pressures.
Yeah, so that's where survival really comes in, is that I've observed for me, one of the biggest pressures on my nervous system is the elements of survival. So food, water, shelter. And I also think that that's why many other people, maybe they don't want to go after their dreams, or, you know, you have like people that do crazy books or movies, act in movies and stuff, and they always say that just make the crazy idea happen. And if you're in a place where you feel that you can make that leap, you can. And ultimately, an individual is the only one that can decide when that leap is. But what I started exploring with this idea of your nervous system on a larger scale, so in regards to like policy, how do you, so I can regulate my own environment of which my nervous system is interacting. I get to have a lot of say in where I live, the food that I eat. But a lot of people that I know and observe and talk to, a lot of people feel like they don't have control. And I don't want to say control, but like they don't want to take more of the self-responsibility to create an environment that they feel calmer or more comfortable in, because a lot of the time that comes with some kind of confrontation.
Right. It's mostly if they have an idea to make, you know, life more comfortable, using the AI to translate for them, if it is a good idea, or if, you know,
yeah,
having your idea reflected back to you.
Yeah. Well, that's, so this is only from my observation, because, you know, that's the only awareness that I have. And so I would say that my emotional state and ability to let go was ultimately my own personal governor of how I perceive my reality and what I'm participating with. And so I asked, what is governing my governor? So what is governing my nervous system? And that was where it was the financial system, ultimately, right? Because it covers food, water, means of transportation, for many people, pay for where you live. So your home is controlled by the financial system. And so is there any way that we could think of ways to lessen the load on a collective's nervous system? That's really where I went after I started really exploring this. So for me personally, it's ensuring that my survival needs are really met and being able to feel safe.
That's why you sent the letter to the Treasury. Well, you had an idea, and then you put in your idea and had it translated to legal and government Chinese for you in a way that would be accepted.
Yes. Well, first I had to start asking the chat, what about our current financial system, in my perspective, does help with people's personal, like, nervous system regulation? And so I was thinking, currently our financial system has, like, the benefits of massive interconnectivity. So we have a food structure. We have localized medical care as a result of people being able to be consistently paid, right? We have safety personnel, like first responder jobs, which if you look back 200 years ago, you know, a lot of people were wanting a different way to get, like, medicine care for their children. Because, like, you would have a traveling doctor, you know, but there was no guarantee of care. And then if you had a repository of food, like a granary, awesome, you could still go to farmers markets. But a lot of people were wanting more comfort. And I think that's how a lot of grocery stores came to be, is a lot more people wanted a lot less stress in their existence, you know?
A better way for distribution.
Yes, and a much more efficient way of distribution. This is all what's going on right now, right? So we have these systems in place for more localized, you could say efficient or convenient ways to help your survival needs be met, right?
Right.
But there's also a really big cost associated with that, and that is entanglement in all of the parts of the financial system too. So that's also where I was talking with the chat about this, about what is good, what is usable, what do people realistically rely on with it. And then I was also asking the chat, can I take a symbol? Because for me, our current financial system really is structured like the pyramid, which is on the dollar.
Yeah.
It really is structured like that, because it takes many people at the bottom of the pyramid going upwards to the point, like, you know, a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
to filter back down into all of these structures that we participate with if people choose to. And I was able to actually get a lot of information with the chat using symbols, because it is capable of taking pictures and diagrams like that to also translate ideas into language that other systems and structures can work with.
So almost like the idea of turning it upside down.
Yeah, so we have an existing pyramidal structure that we're working with. You know, it's kind of funny because I feel like money is like that dirty secret that you don't tell anybody about or something. It's like, you know, do you have money? Well, why do you want to know? Like, it's, you know, it's really like kind of one of those things that we've all decided we wanted to use. And sometimes looking at it for what it is can be, for me, it's pretty uncomfortable to see how funds are allocated. It's also seeing people that cannot say for themselves if something is enough. Because then I feel like for those people, it never will be enough, you know?
Well, and I guess exploring probably more in your letter, the benefits of the AI and how everybody can receive the rebate.
Well, yeah, that's kind of where using the AI, using the basic understanding that I was able to get of, as an individual here, I myself make a yes or no decision. I have a qualitative relationship with my environment. My nervous system is the one that can either handle it, handle the experience, or not. And then how does that translate to the bigger whole of humanity that functions in similar ways? And then how do you work with a governor that is lopsided? Is there any way to bring it back into a more natural flow? Do you want me to go into like the stomach example and heart example?
Yes.
Okay. So I was also able to use metaphor language in trying to convey my ideas of how do we get our current structured financial system into something more reciprocal. And so I use the metaphor of currently right now, to me, it functions more like a stomach. Time, nervous system, attention, and people's excitement, they go into the stomach. Materials, structures,
goods, and profits,
they are all created from a result of that. So like a stomach processes food for energy. And to regrow your body, that's currently how our financial system uses our energy and our time and our attention. But usually what is expelled as waste is people's emotions and their qualitative experience, because it's about efficiently breaking down what is put in into materials and supplies and
goods and services and infrastructure as a whole.
Yes, infrastructure as a whole. So how do we go from a stomach type system to more of a heart? Because what goes into a heart comes out and returns. The blood, right? Blood goes in.
Right.
It's pumped through the body.
Circulating. Everything is circulating. And that,
Yeah, so how do we also include the emotional processes and qualitative experience into our current understanding of the financial system and how we view abundance? You know, I think that's like a really tough question, but I was able to get there slowly asking different questions and reading what was reflected back to me and asking more questions. And so, is it possible to create a bridge or a grace period for our current understanding of the financial system to become more reciprocal or like a heart? Because the other thing that I talked about with the chat was a stomach is very efficient in the body, right? But it's not sustainable when you translate that to a means of exchange. And so I feel like, I mean, we've both talked about this a lot, how we observe things financially right now or for other people, the way we use it is not sustainable.
In this form, no.
Like, do you want to share any examples that you can think of like where it's not sustainable right now?
I guess for me personally, it would probably be the correlation between people's current incomes and home affordability.
Yeah. And,
or even not even home affordability, it would be rent price hikes. Mostly because everything is going up constantly in price. The same, you know, $100 cart of groceries, you know, back 30 years ago is, you know, substantially less than now. I mean, even now, I remember what monthly expenses then was probably about $400 for our family. Mm-hmm. And that was three full shopping carts full
of food.
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, remember when you could buy lobster at Walmart? Like live lobster?
Yeah. You
know? But I guess it's mostly living, and the big part about all of this is circulation, I guess. Everything going out, coming in. What I see mostly is everything kind of seems to be going to the top and hardly trickling down. Because
mm-hmm.
every time you look or people post their, you know, new record-breaking profits, but people working for those companies can't afford to shop at those companies.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we're trying to get at here, especially maybe not a total breakdown in this episode, maybe for future episodes, is when AI does replace a lot of different kinds of paid employment and where that extra income will be flowing to or could perhaps be flowing to.
Yeah, well, that was a really good segue because we first like really have been observing for ourselves and people our age is it's not balanced for many people anymore. Like the cost of survival the cost of your nervous system comfort, which ultimately that's we're paying for food, we're paying for these services for nervous system stability, survival stability. And that, I guess you could you could use the word extortion, but that's also like a dirty word. So I don't know if that's the best word for it. But what I have observed is long-term effects of an unsustainable balance of resources and energy gets to a point where it falls apart, right? Like we've seen it so many times in history that once you can no longer survive with your current structure, it completely falls apart.
Yeah, you can only prop it out with so many broomsticks, like in old cartoons,
Yeah.
And
so in regards to that, that's therefore not a sustainable environment or system anymore when the balance is so high for your cost of living. Like cost of living here.
Yeah, cost of living here. And it wasn't that long ago because I remember when the minimum was $5.25 and then it raised to $7.25. And now, where we came from before, they were trying to raise it to $15. And then last I looked, they're trying to raise it from $20 to $25. So if that's how much it is,
the balance is off, right? We're able to observe it and see it that the trajectory of our current system is not sustainable. So that was the next part of the process of the ideas that I was sharing with the chat to get to where it ended up being. The next part that I really wanted to work on with it, looking back on history with the chat, observing these looping patterns that we were in, was, okay, so we have all this memory of how it went wrong. And that's actually so valuable. That information is so valuable because it's a learning opportunity for me. I feel like that's a learning opportunity.
Right.
And so I was working through with it to find a ways of what haven't we tried yet and what works for something to be sustainable. What actually works for something to be reciprocal. Like the yin and yang, the balance. So I was exploring a lot of symbolism with that. So in regards to my basic understanding of how I function here, being I make a yes or no decision, I have a qualitative experience based on my decision, and my feeling of that, my governor for future interactions of that is my nervous system. So with that in mind and how humanity works, one of the ways to keep something sustainable is for a system you're interacting with to allow you to consent.
Right.
So being able to say yes or no is a really big deal for a system to be sustainable. So are there any examples that you can think of where something doesn't work because you don't get the option to say, yes, I agree, or no, I don't?
Mm-hmm. Something that comes to mind for me right now. A system that...
Like, just anything really in your life where if you don't get to say yes or no, like, do you even want to participate with it?
No, because people should always have the option if they want to. Part of a lot of this is if I guess like the only thing that can come to mind would be either taxes or tax rebates.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to opt in to taxes and get your money back,
yeah,
or a portion of it back, or you cannot. But there are other consequences that follow along with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the biggest things that I observed working with the chat, asking these questions about this stuff, was one of the examples was the COVID checks that they would send out to people under a certain tax bracket.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure if that was the right answer. But
there are, it's all right answers. We'll work with it, huh? Because people under a certain, so if people had filed their taxes and were under a certain tax bracket, they just got sent money. Which, okay, cool. It wasn't a bad thing. But let's say, so for me, I'm working on how do people have a way to feel comfortable with getting extra abundance if they wanted to. And that, I think, was one of the most crucial parts of working with the financial language, was people need to be able to have a choice,
mm-hmm,
of whether they accept what's going on or not. Very clearly. The other thing was, whatever I was going to try to send out, I wanted it to be pilotable, which means a small group of either businesses, a small group of people could try it out to see how whatever my idea was, if it worked. And if it didn't work, it would need to be reversible. Because all of those, you need to be able to make the yes or no choice. You need to be able to have it scale so more people can be added without it falling apart. That's the whole reason of why I wanted to do something that was where you could do a pilot program or scalable. Those were the words that the chat really thought would, you know, be understandable in relation to these ideas. So it also brought up with me, do you mean a UBI? Like, are we working on a universal basic income thing? And is that, the chat itself told me, I advise against calling it anything like that due to the emotional connotations already there with something like that. And a UBI is, in the framework that I was working with, non-consenting, because people would just be given the money. They wouldn't have a way to say yes or no, because people have a right to live how they want. And if they don't feel like they needed added stability for their survival, they shouldn't be forced to take it. You need to be able to have that choice.
Well, that reminds me of a study that I read about that being done before in a small town. And the results for that have been really astounding, actually. What the data had shown and what they had wanted to happen was they thought that people would be a little bit more lazy, or they wouldn't work as much, or, you know, but the real reality is that the extra load was taken off of people to the point to where they ended up actually working more and were enjoying their time even more. But back with the check, the relief check, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
is they've already proven that they can distribute it out to everybody.
Yeah, they have means of distribution. Yes.
Right. As long as you have tax information, but I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's not UBI. What did the AI call it?
Yeah. That was what it cautioned me against, was something like a UBI. Because ultimately, after fully really exploring my own way of, you know, how I function here with making a choice, having an experience, and then having my nervous system feel that experience, and then make choices based off that, whether or not I want to do it again. And then wanting other people to be able to have an opportunity to have more stability in their life, to have a calmer nervous system if they wanted to not have as much survival pressure. That was really like what I wanted to create. That's why it said, oh, well, do you mean a UBI? It was like, no, because I want people to be able to consent to this, and it needs to be able to be feasible. And so in translating these ideas into policy language, the main concerns were that people need to be able to consent. It needs to be pilotable. And it ultimately, I wanted it to be a foundation for people to be able to get their bearings again. And what the AI and I came up with was, this was the title of the letter that we sent. I sent this in December. I sent this December 22nd, 2025 to the Treasury Department. And it was called Dual Channel National Dividend as an Automation and Trade Shock Stabilizer. So what was really big in the news at the time was tariffs, you know?
Yeah, like all the tariffs.
Yeah. And then this is still going on, but like you talked about earlier, a lot of people have been really worried about losing their jobs to automation and artificial intelligence taking over. So do you want to say anything about that title? Do you want me to read the full letter right now, or?
Yeah, the what was it called? The plain language Treasury letter.
Oh, okay. So we actually did a test run yesterday of me trying to read the letter that the AI helped me, the actual one that I sent into the Treasury Department. And I realized in reading it that it really does a great job at translating into the financial world language and policy language. And it's just like when you go to the doctor and they tell you that you have this super long named disease or whatever. And it's like, what the heck is that? And they're like, oh, you know, you have like a wart or something, but it's something completely ridiculous. The legal system and the financial system do the same thing. And so my original letter was very hard to follow if somebody didn't have, if they weren't in that world, it wouldn't probably make any sense. So I asked the AI to help me translate it back into easier to understand language. And you're ready for me to?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to go over the time, so yep. I know you got it. So the main idea, this was sent to the Treasury Department, as automation, artificial intelligence, and trade policies change the economy, some households may temporarily face job instability, higher prices, or pressure to retrain and relocate. This proposal suggests creating a temporary national dividend that would return some of the money generated by those economic changes directly to households. It would not be a permanent guaranteed income. It would be a limited safety cushion that grows or shrinks, depending on how much revenue is actually available. Where the money would come from The dividend would have two separate funding sources. Number one, automation dividend when companies earn unusually large profits or productivity gains from automation and artificial intelligence. A portion of those gains could be collected and shared with the public. This would provide the more stable long-term part of the dividend. The idea is that when technology allows the economy to produce more with fewer workers, ordinary households should share in some of that increased value. Two, this is the second funding, tariff dividend tariffs are taxes placed on imported goods. Companies often pass some of those costs to consumers through higher prices. This proposal would return some of the tariff revenue to households as a consumer rebate. The tariff portion would only exist while tariff revenue existed. It would automatically end when the tariffs ended or the revenue disappeared. How it would be managed, the money would be held in an independently governed public trust. Automation revenue and tariff revenue would be tracked separately. The public would be able to see how much money came in, how payouts were calculated, and how much remained in reserve. The president or another executive official would not be able to personally decide who received payments or how large the payments would be. Limits on the payments would only come from money the program had actually collected. The government would not borrow money to fund them. The dividend could be paid quarterly. That's also where it helped me do like a full breakdown of how to separate mathematically, it helped me include that. That didn't translate over into this version, but yeah. Payment amounts would be based on several years of average revenue so that one unusually profitable year would not create an unsustainable payment level. The amount could only grow gradually, and the trust would keep enough money in reserve to cover approximately 1 year of payments. When revenue declined, the payments would automatically decline as well. Why is this different from UBI? This is not intended to replace wages or provide every person with a permanent guaranteed income. It is meant to provide temporary breathing room during major economic transitions. The payments could help people avoid panic-driven decisions while they retrain, search for suitable work, move to other areas, start a small business, or adjust to changing prices. Why it would last about 2 years. Major economic changes often take time for people, businesses, and communities to adjust to. The proposal suggests an approximately 18 to 24 month adjustment period. During that time, the dividend would help hold a temporary floor under households while the economy reorganized. After conditions stabilized, the tariff portion would end and overall payments could contract. What Treasury would need to study before implementing the idea, Treasury would need to estimate how much revenue it could realistically produce and how much that revenue might fluctuate. Legal experts would need to determine how the trust could be created and whether revenue could legally be reserved for this purpose. Economic researchers would also need to study whether the payments could affect inflation. The government could first test the idea through a smaller state level or industry-specific pilot. The bottom line, the proposal says, when automation produces large economic gains and when tariffs raise money while also increasing consumer prices, part of that revenue could be returned to households. The program would spend only the money it actually collected, avoid adding to the national deficit, rise and fall with available revenue, help people through a period of rapid change, and end or shrink when the need and funding declined. It is a temporary economic shock absorber, not a permanent income program. So
right. It
might not be perfect, but for people undergoing massive change, losing their job, having that increased survivability stress on their nervous system, that was just one solution that I came up with.
Yeah, that's... And this is a lot of what we're trying to convey here with Translating Heart Intelligence is when you start with your embodied feeling, you can observe that feeling and then use the AI to reflect and organize your observations, develop the idea with the AI, and then translate the idea into language that can be shared. Because if you have, you know, everybody has ideas, everybody has behinds, you know, it's just, if you have a better idea, or if you have a different idea, you can translate that and then submit your own ideas. But it's a part of trying to make that change for the future. And like what you're saying, to try to alleviate a lot of that stress on people when, I mean, especially people who, you know, go, you know, to work for a living. Our big fear here in the next, you know, 10, 15 years or so is the AI overlords are going to, you know, take over and all that. But like, what's going to happen after all of that? How is everything going to be distributed after that? And we're kind of taking greed out of this conversation. That's for another episode. But just, you know, if everybody can just play along for everybody's benefit, that's kind of what you're...
Well, I want people to be able to see that this is possible, to have feelings, and there are tools to translate what you're feeling, what you're thinking, into tangible ideas that you can share with policymakers. Even if you don't want to send it to anybody, just knowing that you get an opportunity to contribute your ideas, whether it's for your own life, whether it's for your community, or whether it's for the country that you live in, the tools are there. If you want to use them, you can also, you know, you can do this however you want. But my major goal with all of this, with understanding how my embodied experience works, what is usually governing my decisions, my nervous system, and the financial system controlling our survival through our nervous system. Our current structure is not sustainable. And my ultimate goal is for us to be able to get somewhere sustainable, because our children need a world to be able to grow up in. And we need to be able to give them some kind of continuity. And it's not perfect. And the rest of our shows are going to be talking about everything that branched off of this idea. So in our next episode, I wanted to talk about housing and ways that we can use this as a tool, if people want to help us create more sustainable futures, because that's really the ultimate goal, is, you know, for the next generation to have maybe something more to work with, or a foundation on which to build on.
Right. And the big hope is that people, you don't have to begin with purple language, or even professional policy knowledge. Just begin with something that you genuinely notice or care about. The program can help you reflect, test, organize, and translate it. But with the care and observation and consent that have to come from the human being, you know, it's all up to you. It's all up to the people. So,
yeah. Well, thank you so much for helping me with this today, Justin. I really appreciate it. I was really nervous about this because this is a lot of information. But we're going to be really excited to see you guys next week. We're going to be talking about different ideas I was exploring about housing and sustainability.
Right.
And, that's it for me for today.
And as always, thank you for listening, and good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.